Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 26 of Season 8 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg classic Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is Tierney Steele, aka One Steele's sister. Welcome back to the show, Tierney.
You just can't get rid of me.
Who says I want to?
Sorry, Movies by Minutes community. I'm sticking around.
Well, you keep getting invited back for a reason.
Yes,
So,
thank you for having me on for Get All These Men Therapy Week.
seriously, that's more or less what we're gonna need here. But we'll see. I also know you have a background in military history, so maybe you have some insights that no one would think about. So who
Oh,
knows?
I came with homework for your listeners. Don't worry.
I'm sure. I'm sure. I didn't doubt that for 1 second. Not at all. So, minute 26 begins with a bunch of U.S. soldiers mopping up the action, and ends with Horvath taking a souvenir. So, before we get into the guts of the movie, pun intended. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your history with this movie?
So I have seen Saving Private Ryan before multiple times, although I hadn't watched it in a while. I was a big fan of the Memorial Day weekend war movie-a-thons that used to be on, but I now have a small child, so that hasn't happened in a few years. This is a good one, though. I was a military history major in college, and I didn't specialize in World War II. Like, that wasn't official, but it really was that whole, like, World War II, because I was interested in the home front stuff, and then it led into the Cold War, which is what I was really, like, hot for. Sounds so terrible. I'm sorry. It's not a good thing. but I had decided when I saw Star Wars for the first time in 94, 95, and then those re-releases came out in 97. And right around that time was when I decided I was going to be the next George Lucas. You know, the military history stuff had not, I was into the Jack Ryan movies, but I had not realized that that was going to be like a major in everything. I was still a kid, convinced that I could make movies. And then this hit right in that like obsession with Lucas and Spielberg and all those guys. And I loved From the Earth to the Moon. And so we've got Tom Hanks and Spielberg back together. I was in. I remember talking to people who saw it in theaters. I did not. I had to wait to make it a blockbuster night to see this one. But everyone was talking about, oh, those first 11 minutes, the first part of the movie. Oh my God, it's, you
Well, we now
know,
know it's more than 11 minutes.
cinema changing. And of course, now watching this as an adult, I'm just like, get all of these men all therapy. especially this minute. This minute is like a perfect example of how, I mean, that's why, you know, it's like, oh, the greatest generation. I'm like, yeah, they're the greatest generation in my opinion, only because they didn't all come home and go completely batshit crazy. Because
Well, there's
they would have
probably
been valid to do that.
That's true. I mean, they definitely went through a lot of stuff here. No question about it. And one of the things with this movie is that, they don't sugarcoat it at all. They show us everything. Which is both good and bad.
And this is such a good example because it's Mel like it goes from Mellish making a joke into the crowd. Like, it shows how like he tries to play it off. He tries to think this is cool. He's got a Hitler Youth knife now. Ha! I'm taking it home. Now it's a Shabbat shalom cutter. And he can't do it. He can't hold that. He can't hold on to that. It's so.
You see, I look at it differently. We'll get there when we go through this minute. But I see that scene very differently than the way you just described it. That's interesting. It's interesting okay. that you see it more from that they're trying to make light of something, but I think it's a deeper thing. But again, okay. we shall get there. We shall get there.
All right.
So basically, we left things off on Friday with they're pretty much finishing up the whole battle. You know, we've gone through 25 very gut-wrenching minutes. Again, pun intended, but there's no other way to describe it. You know, that it's the truth. That's what it is. And you know, things are now starting to calm down a little bit. They've finally taken over the bunker. And you know, now
this is the happy successful part of it.
you can in some ways look at it that way. It's unfortunate, but that is, you know, that is a way that you can look at this. You know, these are guys who have finally made it through hell, and they're still there. You know, in the first few seconds of this minute, we get a bunch of soldiers, you know, shooting at the Germans who are running away. We even get a big explosion of one of the guns, which presumably, you know, there's a group of Americans that are inside the bunker that have now disabled this gun so they can't be used later. And then they show us something very interesting. You actually see these American soldiers who, you know, as you mentioned before, they're from the Greatest Generation, but they're still kids. You know, I don't know if you have you seen the Pacific.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you see that there also, you see that the way that these men or boys act when the battle is over, and in some ways they do some childish things because they start looting bodies. You know, they start looking for souvenirs.
Yep.
You know, which, you know, I don't think that would be the first thing that I would want to do at this point. But, you know, that's apparently what they want to do.
Well, after you pee, what are you going to do?
That's true. But Tom Hanks doesn't do that in this movie. Sorry. I know you're a big Tom Hanks fan, but.
Souvenir hunting, you know, is a time-honored tradition. It happens in everyone. Part of what got me to the military history place was I've seen every single episode of MASH at least 4 times, and there's one on souvenir hunting in there. I mean, it's just, it's considered disgusting and immoral by everyone who isn't there, and yet everyone who's there seems to do it.
Correct. I mean, you even see it in certain movies. You see it in passing. I mean, I know that you were part of the Movies by Minute group project, The Best Years of Our Lives.
Yep.
And yeah, you have that there too. You know, you have him come back, and he's got, you know, he's got a Japanese flag, and he's got a sword. Yep. You know, he took his souvenirs also, and you know, his son is not as appreciative of it as he is.
Like, that's weird, you know, Dad.
That's right. He's proud that he killed someone and was able to bring home these souvenirs, and his son was I don't think so.
Yeah,
maybe not.
It was in the Pacific, so I was trying to think of, like, what's the thing where it's, like, the brother brought home a swastika flag.
Yes.
And is showing off, like, at the end of, you know, like, after dinner.
That's right.
And it's in the Pacific. I finally was able to remember it.
I mean, again, we see it also in Band of Brothers. You know, the idea that they're you know, Hubler is the whole time is saying, I want to get a Luger. And he finally gets a Luger and then shoots himself in the leg and ends up dying from it.
I have a question that I did not go back, because I thought of the question after I'd watched the movie. And I was like, I'm not going to go back and rewatch it. I'm going to ask you. Can I ask a question that is a spoiler for the end of this movie?
Of course you can.
Okay, I don't want to mess up any listeners. So, listener, if you're watching this along and you don't remember what happens to Mellish, go la 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 for 30 seconds. Is this the same knife he's killed by?
No.
No. Okay. Okay.
No. That knife is the knife used by the German.
But he pulls a knife. Like
so does the German. They both pull knives.
Oh, okay. I thought he pulled the knife and then the German takes it. And that's that. Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, first of all, you are asking a great question. And, you know, we're going to have to think about that one. We're going to have to look into it. You may be right. I didn't even think about that fact. I don't think so.
Started thinking way too deep about what it says that he is killed by a Hitler Youth knife. And then I was like, I don't even know that it's the same knife, Tierney. Shut up.
You're right about the fact that we're not 100% sure of that. But if it is, wow, that really would say a lot about this whole thing.
So anyway, back to the current moment. So people, I had not seen Fargo when I saw this movie. And so to me, Adam Goldberg is the guy from Dazed and Confused. And so this whole movie is very strange to me and messing with my mind. Because he is such a good actor. And I just think of him as like, you know, the I gotta dance guy.
Well, I always think of him from Friends.
Who is he on Friends?
He played... Okay, first of all right, to answer your question, I peeked ahead, and Mellish is the only one who pulls out a knife, but it is not a Hitler Youth knife. He pulls out a bayonet because it's much longer.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
It's not the Hitler Youth knife, but that is a very good catch about the fact that it is apparently the same exact knife. You know, the German does not have a knife. The German ends up taking his knife and twisting it on him.
As soon as he did that, I was like, no, oh no, oh no. Like, I kind of knew what was going to happen, even though I didn't know, you know, I hadn't seen this movie in so long, I had forgotten, but. Right.
So it's not Chekhov's knife, but, you know, but, yeah, again, very good catch. You see, I'm not up there yet. I got a lot
still,
more weeks till I get
speech.
There.
I get it, man. I get it.
I have a little way to go.
In front of you.
That's right. But again, it's a great catch. The idea that it is possible that it would be the same one. But again, you can see in the minute when Mellish pulls out he's pulling out a bayonet. It's much longer than a Hitler Youth knife that he's about to pull out here, or that he's about to get here, right?
If Steven Spielberg listens to your podcast and is like, "Oh my God, I should have had it be that knife," call me.
I will do so. I'm waiting for that to happen. You know, I'm waiting for Steven Spielberg or Tom Hanks to get in touch with me. I do have a guest that will be on that actually knows Tom Hanks. I asked him to get me in touch with him and he left. So I don't think that's going to happen because he said that Tom Hanks probably couldn't pick him out of a room. But if he was standing next to him and someone mentioned his name, he would say, and then he would have a conversation with him. You know, it's
very tricky.
We actually, hopefully, the plan is to have an interview with one of the sons of one of the Band of Brothers, and
nice.
he does a tour. He goes around the world, giving lectures and touring about everything that happened with Band of Brothers and stuff like that. And he said he's met Tom Hanks numerous times, and every time that he's met him, and someone like you said. He said to me, he said, Tom Hanks couldn't pick him out of a room. This is George Lewis Jr. He said he wouldn't be able to pick him out of a room. But, you know, once he's introduced to him, Tom has a lot to say.
Yeah.
You know, so that type of thing. So I said, get me in touch with him. And he just laughed. You know, so, what can you do?
So, listeners, if you want to hear my connection to, it's not Band of Brothers, but to Masters of the Air, I've got a really good one coming up tomorrow when I talk about souvenirs that my family got, because we see it at the end of this minute, but I really wanted to give Mellish his due in this minute, and it continues into the next. So I was like, all right, I'll save that for Tuesday.
Okay. Please do. We will wait with heavy anticipation for that tomorrow.
Yes. Mostly, my big shout out for this minute is, just because I wanted to bring something that I feel like a lot of your guests aren't going to bring. I mean, when you study World War II, when you study Steven Spielberg movies, let's face it, we get a lot of the same old over and over again. Like, you start to, these things get a little weird. I wanted to bring something a little different. And so for minute 26, I would like to shout out something. And my shout out today is Rebecca Rubin, the Jewish American girl doll, ladies and gentlemen. Let's give it up for her. 1914, Rebecca Rubin. If you would like a American girl doll that comes with her own little Shabbat set with the, and menorah for Hanukkah, that is the American girl doll for you.
Oh, wow. Very nice. See, I'm Jewish and I didn't even know about that. So there you go.
Yeah. Now, did it take until like a lot longer than you'd think to get a Jewish American girl doll? Yes, yes, it did. But you know what? It's fine. There's one now. Yeah. Her dream is to be an actress because it's 1914. Movies have started. She's like, this would be cool. But, you know, she comes from a traditional Jewish family in New York City. They're like, what are you talking about? So, yes, I am now cannot wait to listen to your show and see if anyone else manages to bring up the Pleasant Company dolls.
Well, the only person, let's put this way, the only person who I can conceivably think that would bring it up is Jim O'Kane. You know, anyone else, I don't think so.
Yes. And her, again, her story is set in the before World War I. So obviously no Hitler Youth knives, obviously.
No.
Sanctioned by that company.
No.
All
right. Right. So here they actually give us. So we have a number of the men that we're going to get to know very well over the next 6 months. they're sitting there on the edge of this trench. Now, we did notice on Friday Caparzo. We did notice that Caparzo jumped into the trench, and you know, here we see Ryben on the side, and we see Jackson there also. Two of them just sitting on the side of this trench, and then Caparzo picks up his head. And, you know, presumably we know that he was just looting one of the bodies and he goes, hey, fish. Now, I'm trying to figure out why they're called Mellish Fish, because his name is Stanley Mellish. So I don't, maybe Mellish Fish, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah,
the rhyming of it also. Could be. And then he goes, look at this, a Hitler Youth knife. So what do you know about Hitler Youth knives?
I had Swing Kids on the long list of World War II movies, and then I took it off for later this week. My goodness. I know I'm very confused on why it is here in Normandy in 1944, because while there are many famous stories of Hitler Youth being thrust into combat, this is not one of them.
No, well, why not? Why not? Well, first of all, whoa, one second. So, I mean, they started the Hitler Youth organization in 1935. It's like the Boy Scouts, basically, yeah. You know, for Nazi boys and girls, you know, yes. And
or for all boys and girls, whether you really wanted to or not, eventually.
That's true. Awesome. That is true. Awesome. And they would start at around the age of 10. But, you know, let's say that in 1935, this kid was 15 and joined the Boy Scouts, right? So here we are 9 years later. So he's 20, 24, yeah. 25. It is potentially possible that he still has his Hitler Youth knife from back then. Now, the idea is that the boys were given these knives, which the official name are the H.J. Fartenmesser.
That didn't sound right.
Fartenmesser. There we go. That
sorry,
probably sounds
English
a little
speaker.
Better.
Nope, I'm calling it the fart knife from now on.
Okay. Feel free. Which is
have to laugh, guys. This is serious crap.
Yeah, of course. Really, seriously. And so they, you know, after they would pass their all their examinations, they would be given, you know, one of these knives, and the knives were had nickel plated hilts with black checkered grip plates, and they had an enameled swastika on the side. And at the beginning, they would have them etched with the motto of the organization, which was blood and honor. And then after that, they made plain blades that usually had RZM markings. I don't really know what an RZM is. Maybe it's the Reich markings or something like that.
Yeah.
But so again,
actually, that makes a lot more sense. That,
yes.
That the person would still have held on to this as an important thing.
Right. And again, Caparzo finding someone who has one of these, it means that this is someone who,
yeah,
you know, has been fully indoctrinated, I guess you can say, for lack of a better phrase. How much do you think it costs to buy a Hitler Youth knife today?
I've destroyed my search engine many times, but I did not do it for that. How much do they cost?
So I found a website. There's a whole bunch of them, obviously. The prices range, and they're really expensive. The first one on the list is $1,000. Next one's $700. The next one is $2,000. After that, we had one for $1,500. You know,
I bet it makes a difference, the engraved versus the plain blades. And
I assume. Here's another one it says it's in mint condition, $1,250. You know, just I'm probably gonna be flagged now that I went to go look up a website.
I was gonna say,
selling...
you're doing the Lord's work, looking that stuff up.
apparently. But yeah. So they do you know how many kids were in the Hitler Youth by 1940? Again, we're not going to talk about who wanted to be there and who didn't want to be there. But
yeah,
how many?
It's thousands. I mean, tens of thousands. It's got to be.
In 1940, there were 8 million members of the Hitler Youth. And it basically encompassed all males between the ages of 14 and 18 because they were mandated to join the group. And the dream for every one of them was to get a Hitler Youth knife.
Yeah. Wow.
Right. It doesn't say here how many females were in the in the Hitler Youth, but we know that there were. You know, there were many young girls that were very
their own division.
Adamant. Did you ever see the movie Europa Europa?
Oh my God, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a movie my parents dragged me to when I was 16. There was like a special showing to it. And I was like, I don't want to go see this. I don't know what it is. And I loved it.
It's a good one.
And there's a point there where the young German girl played by Julie Delphi, a very young Julie Delphi, shows how much she loves, Nazism and everything like that by going out and getting herself pregnant at the early age of like 14 in order to have children for the Fuhrer, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Some crazy, crazy things like
that. It's real dark.
Yes. It's real dark, but again, it's real dark.
And I also, I try to have a lot of grace for the fact that like these people did not have a choice. Some of them were like, this is great. I'm so happy to be here.
Right.
But I also, you know, if you're looking at like historical figures, don't automatically assume that. And then if you find out like, oh no, they were diehard, just kidding. Feel free to hate that person. But,
correct.
There have been things like, and they were in the Hitler Youth. And it's like, they did not have a choice, man.
Right.
Like that was not.
That's true.
You know, what did they go on to do? Like where, let's look at that. Or people, you know, they served in the German army. Okay, well, wait a second here. That could mean so many things.
Exactly. For sure.
But this that makes so much more sense now, though, that like, no, this would be something that you would hold on to, that you would bring with you as you're like advancing up the ranks and stuff.
That's right. Because again, we don't know the rank of this guy who was killed. He could maybe he was even an officer or something like that. You know, it's very possible. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Caparzo then, you know, shows it to Mellish and passes it over to him. And Mellish takes it and looks at it for a second and then breaks down as he's seeing it and goes, and now it's a Shabbat challah cutter, right? Now, you mentioned before that to you, this felt like it was something that's more of a, they're trying to be comedic about what they're, you know, what they've gone through, anything like that. Now, I look at it and, you know, I've seen this movie many, many times. And I've always looked at the character of Mellish slightly differently than you probably have, because, you know, I obviously have some things in common with Mellish, you know, being Jewish also. And to me, the interpretation of him, what he's saying is, he's saying, look, you know, I'm now going to take something that was used. I don't know if evil is the right word, but that was being used for bad. And now I'm going to make it, I'm going to use it for something for good. You know, I'm going to take it and I'm going to use it now. You know, to slice, you know, challah every Shabbat. You know, I'm going to take this and now I'm going to consecrate it, making it something good. And him breaking down at this moment, you see, I mean, the rest of this minute is basically him crying, as he's, you know, or most of the rest of this minute is him crying.
Yeah.
Now I look at it, I've always looked at it from the perspective that he's thinking now about all of his, relatives, or other Jews, you know, that have been, that he knows have been, I don't know if by D-Day they really knew everything that was going on, you know, in the concentration camps or whatever.
Later, he knows.
Yeah. But he knows they're being treated, they're being mistreated. You know, again, he might not know the extent of it all, but, you know, so I always interpreted it that he's breaking down from that. Now, I tried looking online, you know, different interpretations, and it goes to something that you said before, that a lot of people think that he's breaking down because, you know, okay, the battle has ended and now the adrenaline has dissipated. And so at this point, he now is, you know, just going through all the fear of everything that he had just gone through. Now, again, I don't buy that, because I still believe even watching this again, I believe that he's breaking down because of the idea that, okay, this is what the Nazis were doing to my people, that type of thing. But again, it can be interpreted in many ways.
In the movie,
with the Jewish star.
He not only knows that it's not bad, he knows it's bad news specifically for, you know, like, you. I mean, he could have cousins that have gotten out of, you know, we don't know his back. I think it's really, we don't get any backstory on any of, you know, you get
none
like
of them.
The most cursory things. And I think it's more, maybe it is not having it as, like, to me, it's like, okay, this is a Hitler youth. Now I'm going to use it to slice my bread, you know, like my Jewish bread, take that, you know. And the breakdown is, yeah, just the post. I don't know. It's very interesting how it can go multiple ways.
Correct. I tend to think that since, you know, this movie came out, you know, 5 years after Spielberg made Schindler's List, that there's more of a chance that he might have thrown that in there more from the perspective, you know, that here's a Jew bemoaning the fate of his people, type of thing. But again, it could be interpreted either way.
Yeah, because throughout the movie, you see him multiple times being, you know, guys.
That's right. 100%.
And and then, like you said, there is more to this minute, but it goes into the next.
Right, so. but before we even get there, so as he's crying, we hear him sobbing, and then they show Caparzo, who, you know, Vin Diesel, who has this strange look on his face, trying to figure out what's going on with his friend here. And then in the background, I never noticed this before doing my research here. There's a dead German body and there's another soldier who's frisking him.
Mm.
Basically, again, looking for loot.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, I mean, he takes two hands and puts it on the guy's arm and you know, it looks like he's frisking him. You know, and then we get a lot more of this minute where Mellish's just breaking down. And again, we you know, it we'll leave it open to interpretation as to what is he crying about. You know, which aspect of the things that are happening here.
Yeah.
And then as he's weeping, we hear in the background Miller scream, "Keep him moving." And you know, he continues, and we hear artillery fire in the background, and you know, you hear gunshots.
Like, battle's still going.
That's right.
We're like, oh, these are the guys that made it. They're looting bodies now. The battle is over. No, it's not.
Exactly. And I think that the it's nice that they show us a little bit of humanity from one of these characters here at this point. You know, the battle has now ended, and now we're seeing a little bit of humanity. And then they focus on the face of Sergeant Horvath. You know, we have you know, Tom Sizemore there, and you know, he's looking a little somber at first, and then he looks down, and you're not really sure what he's doing. And then you know, the camera pans down, and you see he's got like this little container, and he's filling it up with sand. You know, and he's making sure to put enough sand in there, and he puts a cap on it, and we see that it's written France. And I love how we see that he has like a little bandage on his thumb, and he has you know, like a string on his wrist and stuff like that. I mean, the detail here is just amazing. You know, about everything. And then he picks it up and starts to put it into a knapsack that we can see has also Africa and LY next to it. You know, so there he's got no Tierney, I know what it is. Tomorrow we'll see it completely, but I just wanted to.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes. I didn't realize where it cut.
So it cuts right there. Exactly. So we see just the LY on that. And, you know, we'll talk a little more about the idea of souvenirs, at, you know, based also on the fact that you have things to say about this also. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we move on to today's segment?
No. I feel bad that we're starting off with my most basic answers for a segment with Monday.
Okay. Well, it just happens to be Monday. So what can you do?
That's, yep.
All right. So every Monday we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guests will give their top five John Williams scores, themes, however you want to interpret that on your own. So, Tierney, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
I feel so cheesy because it's all the answers that I'm sure everyone is going to have. I've got Home Alone. I am an elder millennial. It speaks to me. I've got Harry Potter. Magical man.
Which Harry Potter?
The do. I didn't break down. I just went with franchises.
Okay.
The man has composed so much.
I know. Okay. So we'll go with the original Harry Potter from that perspective.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Home Alone, Harry Potter, Indiana Jones, another classic.
Okay. Raiders?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I flip-flopped on my one and two a couple times, depending on, like, how you're counting it. But I ended up putting Jurassic Park for two. And one I put Star Wars. I mean, what are we counting there? It's Star Wars. The man wrote the music for Star Wars.
Correct. No, but there's a difference between the just to tell you the differentiation, that, you know, you can say the main Star Wars theme, or you can say... For instance, you know, the Darth Vader's theme.
Imperial
March. March. There you go.
Yeah, I was like, by the time you broke down all the different motifs, I was like, I'd be here forever. So I just went with my top five, basically franchise Williams moments. And I can't believe some of the things that are left off this list.
Yes.
But
I completely agree. You're going for like... That.
Immediately iconic. So yeah, that's, I was like, I feel like such a basic bitch, but I'm like, they're really good John Williams movie themes.
All All right. Excellent. So, Tierney, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Oh, well, they can find me at onesteelsister.com or on Instagram at onesteelsister. I haven't really been doing much other social media. The world kind of fell apart on us, huh? I've done a bunch of these Movies by Minutes podcasts, and my website has links to my shows and also my guest appearances.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn it. Earn this. In my solitude, you haunt me. Reveries of days gone by.